The Bureau of Labor Statistics announced recently that prices were 8.3% higher last month compared with August of last year. The U.S. Federal Reserve's target rate for inflation is 2% annually. That news has led some to speculate that the U.S. Federal Reserve could increase interest rates by a full percentage point, a drastic move for an institution that usually moves interest rates cautiously up and down by a quarter of a percentage point. The sharp rise in the interest rates are aimed at slowing the economy and bringing down prices. Higher interest rates have fed through to the housing market, where rates for a 30-year mortgage have now passed the 6% mark for the first time in the past 14 years. Until recently, Jerome Powell had suggested a soft landing was possible for the U.S. economy, in which rising interest rates would bring down prices without causing a severe financial downturn. But at the annual meeting of the central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, last month, Jerome Powell acknowledged that economic distress was a price the U.S. Federal Reserve was willing to pay to control inflation. He said, "While higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to American households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation, but a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain." Moreover, The Hill reported U.S. markets are bottoming out as they process the latest interest rate hikes from the U.S. Federal Reserve in its battle to fight high inflation. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped nearly 500 points to hit 29,590 at market close on Friday, 24th of September, its lowest point in nearly 2 years. Since the U.S. Federal Reserve started raising interest rates in March, the index has lost more than 13% of its value and is down more than 19% on the year. Other indices have followed suit. The Standard & Poor's 500 fell 65 points to close at 3,693 on Friday, down more than 15% since last March and almost 23% on the year. The technology-heavy Nasdaq index dropped nearly 200 points, or 1.8%, to close at 10,867, down almost 20% since last March. Interest rates have also increased to 3.25 percentage points since the U.S. Federal Reserve started raising them from 0% last March. This has had the effect of making many goods and services more expensive and driving down demand to bring down inflation. Meanwhile, an opinion poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research shows the vast majority of the American public are dissatisfied with the state of the economy. According to the findings, around 29% of U.S. adults say the economy is in good shape, and 71% say it is doing poorly. The pollsters also revealed that only 27% of the American public are content with the economic and political course taken by the administration of President Joe Biden, while 72% say things are going in the wrong direction. Commenting on the survey results, the researchers noted, concerns about President Joe Biden's handling of the economy persist. Only 38% of the American public approve of Biden's economic leadership, while 53% disapprove of the way he has dealt with raging inflation. According to the opinion poll, The vast majority of the American public are concerned about domestic problems rather than foreign policy issues. The top five concerns are the rate of inflation, which jumped to 8.3% in the month of August, the state of the economy, the state of jobs, gun control, abortion, and soaring gasoline prices.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Tirana, Albania. A troll farm in action. All are working with one purpose in mind. But what is a troll farm? It's an institutionalized group of internet trolls aimed to interfere in political opinions and decision-making. Their target? The Islamic Republic of Iran. This troll farm belongs to the MKO terrorist cult. MEK's Albania troll factory promoted the opinions of MEK terrorist agenda, and that was regime change in Iran. It spread fake news and devoted itself to manipulate, provoke, and to shape the public's mind for rebellion, acts of violence, and the destruction of property. Certain analysts like Kenneth Timmerman and former CIA officer Paul Pillar also believe that the terrorist cult hires protesters to shape public opinion in exile, or even protests overseas, like this one. Online writer Heshmat Alavi. He had gained popularity. He had posted plenty of anti-Iran articles, and his posts were making his presence known, retweeted quite often. His Twitter account resume claimed that he was a human rights and political activist, writer, and commentator on Iran and West Asia studies. At one point, he had become so popular that even the former U.S. President Donald Trump referred to him when it came to undermining the landmark JCPOA nuclear deal. The problem was, this person did not exist. The Intercept ran this headline. Described as an Iranian activist, he wrote dozens of articles for right-wing outlets. But is he a real person? It said the writer Heshmat Alavi pushed for regime change in Iran. But an MEK defector said the controversial, exiled opposition group created the persona. Former MEK member named Hassan Heirani, who helped manage the Alavi persona in Albania, told The Intercept back in 2019 that Heshmat Alavi was a person run by a team of people from the political wing of the MEK. They write whatever they are directed by their commanders and use this name to place articles in the press. This is not and has never been a real person. Yet plenty of people, including journalists and analysts, had fallen for him, including Forbes magazine, Al Arabiya, and The Hill. These so-called reputable outlets then used his information as a basis to spread propaganda and disinformation about Iran. The MKO's fake Heshmat Alavi case was just one example of how Iran is consistently demonized and targeted. Just recently, two studies published this past August exposed how large numbers of fake accounts were spreading pro-Western and pro-NATO propaganda on social media, all the while demonizing U.S. adversaries such as China, Russia, and Iran. In the case of Iran, fake accounts attacked Iran and accused it of having too much influence. This propaganda included fake news alleging, for instance, that Iran was trafficking the organs of Afghan refugees. This anti-Iran network included accounts claiming to be independent media outlets. In short, These two investigations were part of a growing body of evidence showing how Western governments and their allies have weaponized social media platforms and have turned them into weapons in a new Cold War setting. A separate study also published in August offered further insight into how social media is weaponized to spread pro-Western propaganda. Titled Unheard Voice, Evaluating 5 Years of Pro-Western Covert Influence Operations, the report was co-authored by Stanford Internet Observatory and a famous intelligence company called Graphica. Graphica was notorious since it worked closely with the U.S. government, contracting with the Pentagon, DARPA, and the Senate Intelligence Committee. Although it is very limited in scope and it has clear biases, the document does show that they accused China, Russia, and Iran of being imperialists while praising the U.S. governments. The report stated our joint investigation found an interconnected web of accounts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and 5 other social media platforms that use deceptive tactics to promote pro-Western narratives in the Middle East and Central Asia. What stands out is how the online platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and even media outlets like the UK government-funded BBC, allowed publication or even broadcast of these types of material, which included inciting violence. In the case of the BBC, Ofcom, the media regulatory body which prohibits any material which encourages or incites acts of violence, for example, blatantly ignored how the channel was encouraging Iranians to come out to the streets and to commit these acts of violence. So bad was the coverage that the Iranian Foreign Ministry summoned the UK ambassador to protest. Indications are coming from the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss, who is considering to break with decades-old tradition and move the UK embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. This move has been strongly criticized by not only Palestinians, but the UN. A number of special rapporteurs have said relocating the British embassy to Al-Quds would break with international law and UN resolutions and reverse decades of British policy.
The capital of Israel. Thank you.
The potential move of the embassy to Al-Quds follows the footsteps of the former U.S. President Donald Trump.
President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
It also led to Palestinians' fierce condemnation, leading to protests and clashes in which Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians. Even the former UK Prime Minister Theresa May criticized the move at the time. Special Rapporteur focused on Palestine has said, two or more wrongs do not make a right. Acts altering character, status, the demography of Al-Quds have no legal effects and are null and void and must be rescinded. But why would the UK Prime Minister consider such a move when the UK is grappling with a series of crises which are more important for a new Prime Minister, like a cost of living crisis that has gripped the UK, getting worse by the day? Liz Truss has not hidden the fact of her pro-Israeli stance. She has said that under my leadership, Israel will have no stauncher friend in the world. That's what I've done as Foreign Secretary and Trade Secretary. I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. She also said that she would further solidify her ties with Israel by signing a free trade deal with Israel. This is interesting since she has rejected that notion with the U.S. at this point in time. Liz Truss has admitted that the UK will not strike a post-Brexit free trade deal with the US for a number of years. The controversial consideration by the UK Prime Minister to move UK's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds may have been put in overdrive when Truss made this promise to Israel during her campaign to become Prime Minister. During the Tory leadership contest, she addressed this to an influential lobby group called the Conservative Friends of Israel. But who is the Conservative Friends of Israel? It is a British parliamentary group affiliated to the Conservative Party. It's dedicated to strengthening business and political ties between the UK and Israel, as well as between the British Conservative Party and the Israeli Likud Party. At one point, for example, it was accused of bankrolling the Tories, where 50% of MPs in the shadow cabinet are conservative friends of Israel members. Back in 2017, secret tapes exposed the amount of Israeli influence over the UK Conservative Party. Israeli embassy linked political operators discussed taking down Foreign Minister Alan Duncan, boasting of planting parliamentary questions.
Eloquent Labour friends of Israel, they're trying, they want to stop the young Labour.
This expose revealed how the senior political officer at the Israeli embassy in London discussed a potential plot to take down British politicians, including a minister of state at the Foreign Office who supported Palestinian civil rights. Desmond Sway, a former Conservative minister and parliamentary aide to former Prime Minister David Cameron, described it best when he said at the time that what we cannot have is Israel acting in the UK with the same impunity that it enjoys in Palestine. Clearly, an interference in another country's politics of the murkiest and most discreditable kind. It is no secret that Israel uses its lobby power in the US to have Washington make decisions in its favor. Especially the powerful lobby group AIPAC. This covers things like supporting Israel at the UN, approving arms sales in the billions of dollars, to pro-Israel stance when it comes to issues like illegal settlements. Now Israel has a pro-hawkish prime minister in Downing Street that it can count on. And for as long as she is in office, Israel is making sure that she will act on Israel's behalf. It is not that far off to conclude that Truss has promised favors for Israel when it comes to the issue doing business in exchange for Israeli investment, so that together we can create well-paid, high-value jobs in both countries, as stated by the International Trade Secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan. Her new tax cuts, described as trickle-down economics, was reported to disproportionately benefit the rich and make her unpopular. This may, by default, involve Israeli businesses who would warmly receive her plans to slash taxes despite the economic crisis. Referendums have begun in the Ukrainian regions of Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhzhia, and Kherson. The voting is set to run for 5 days until September 27. These referendums have been blasted by the West.
The very international order that we have gathered here to uphold is being shredded before our eyes. We cannot, we will not allow President Putin to get away with it.
As members of the Security Council, we must unequivocally reject Russia's attempts to annex Ukrainian territory.
But in contrast to how the media has called it illegal, there are many who are in favor of it. Given this support, then how can the referendums be deemed illegal or a sham? Memories are short as to when this war actually started and how many people have been killed. One figure put the number of people killed to at least 13,000. Another puts it at 10,000. Keeping in mind, these are the number of deaths before the war, which began in the year 2014. Russia had tried since 2014 to reach a diplomatic solution with the West over this conflict. It was called the Minsk Agreements. Why the Minsk Agreement failed depends on who you speak to. The former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych accused Kiev and its U.S. patrons responsible for the poor implementation of the peace agreement. Yet at the heart of the conflict lies NATO's eastward expansion. The Kremlin claims that the West broke a promise that it made in the 1990s not to expand NATO after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Putin said NATO had promised not to expand an inch to the east, promises made to the former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev during negotiations between the West and the Soviet Union over German unification. Back in 1998, NATO was confined to Western Europe, yet today, it is at Russia's gate. This shows Putin's accusation of NATO's eastward expansion to hold true. Putin therefore set Ukraine as its red line, hence Crimea, and now the referendums that are taking place in these four regions will set up a wall to stop NATO's eastward expansion. Not surprisingly, the outcome of the referendums are predicted to be in Russia's favor. By incorporating these four areas, Moscow has set up these regions to be part of its own. As such, Ukrainian attacks to retake them can be portrayed as attacks on Russia itself. And this is where things have taken a nuclear turn. Russia can potentially use that to justify even a nuclear response. The U.S. President Joe Biden addressed that threat at the UNGA.
Again, just today, President Putin has made overt nuclear threats against Europe and a reckless disregard for the responsibilities of the non-proliferation regime.
But the Russian president's nuclear warning stemmed from the U.S. and NATO's nuclear threat first. The nuclear threat exchange is enough to make anyone conclude that there should be a solution drawn up immediately before things get out of hand in this conflict. That, however, was thwarted by the West, who was keen on continuing this conflict. Russia and Ukraine may have agreed on a tentative deal to end the war back in April, but the former UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson prevented that from happening. The agreement, in short, would have seen Russia withdraw to its position on February 23, when it controlled part of the Donbas region and all of Crimea. And in exchange, Ukraine would have promised not to seek NATO membership and instead receive security guarantees from a number of countries. The conflict itself cannot end now in the eyes of the West. The profits made from military assistance to Ukraine are staggering. Furthermore, the U.S. is using scaremongering tactics into making European countries, like the Baltic nations in particular, into believing that Russia could target them next for the sake of profits. It was reported U.S. arms manufacturers were not cashing in directly from thousands of missiles, drones, and other weapons, but they stood to profit big time over the long run by supplying countries eager to boost their defenses against Russia. And finally, the U.S. was making massive profits in another area, energy sales to Europe, in particular gas sales. Some single shipments were bringing in $200 million. The U.S. was now sending 60% of its liquefied natural gas exports to Europe, up from less than 20% this time a year ago. And this is a classic case of U.S. war profiteering.
As the war in Ukraine drags on, Russia announces its intent to intensify its military operation there. President Putin has now announced a partial mobilization of Russia's military forces. Putin said the Defense Ministry had recommended drawing military reservists into active service as the country faces a protracted conflict in Ukraine and Donbas. Putin says the measure is necessary because Russia is fighting, quote, the entire Western military machine in Ukraine. Putin further accused Ukraine of backing away from a deal that was in the making to end the war. After certain compromises were reached, Kiev received a de facto direct order to derail all agreements. More weapons were pumped into Ukraine. The Kiev regime deployed more gangs of international mercenaries and nationalists, military units trained to NATO standards and under de facto command of Western advisors. Putin is referring to negotiations that gained momentum following the start of the war back in February. But the West, headed by the United States, pressured Kiev to quit the talks. The West saw the war as an opportunity to contain Russia. In other words, the United States and its allies capitalized on Moscow's moves in Ukraine to settle their long-running differences with the Kremlin. They then began pouring military hardware into East Europe and Ukraine in particular. The United States has already given billions of dollars of military aid to Ukraine and encouraged the leaders in Ukraine to keep up the fight at the expense of their own people. Ukraine has now turned into a battleground used by the United States and its allies in their fight against Russia. During his Wednesday speech, President Putin also commented on the upcoming referendums in the two Donbas republics and two regions of Ukraine currently controlled to a large extent by Russian troops. They are putting to a general vote a proposal to ask Moscow to accept them as new parts of the Russian Federation. The polling is scheduled for Friday. Back in February, Russia recognized the two Donbas regions of Luhansk and Donetsk as sovereign republics. However, Kiev lost de facto control of both in 2014 when the local populations rejected the outcome of the Western-backed Maidan coup. But it now appears that they are set to join Russia, which will further increase tensions. It's believed that Russia's partial mobilization is to prepare for the possible fallout of that decision. Back in 2014, Russia took control of the strategic Crimea Peninsula following a referendum there. Ukraine, backed by the West, has made some inroads into the territories held by Russia. Ukraine's counter-offensive has seen the country recapture the first village in Luhansk. They are also making inroads into the Kharkiv region. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has claimed that the Russian invaders are now in, quote, panic. But Russia has not given any indication that it's prepared to accept Kiev's demands for a full withdrawal from Ukrainian territory, including areas seized in 2014. It now appears that the confrontation between Russia and the West, which practically started since the fall of the Berlin Wall, has entered a new phase. And there are now concerns that the crisis may develop into a nuclear war between the global powers.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Salam alaikum, Hussein Ruhullah, Ali Nasir, and Fawad Haider. How are you?
Fine, sir. How
fine,
are
inshallah?
You?
Yes. Okay, that's great. Ali Nasir, how are
you? Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. And Fawad Haider?
Fine.
Okay, thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for joining us today. In this session, again, we have our brothers from Sevier International School. So we are going to, inshallah, hold another Quranic session for you. So, Fawad, Hussein, and Ali Nasir, today, inshallah, we will be working on verse number 17 of Surah Al-Baqarah and also verse 18. Okay, these two verses, inshallah, we'll be working on today. So, before we start, let's listen to these two verses.
مثلهم كمثل الذي استوقد نارا فلما أضاءت ما حوله ذهب الله بنورهم وتركهم في ظلمات لا يبصرون صم بكم عمي فهم لا يرجعون.
Alhamdulillah, now we will be listening and repeating, okay? I will recite once, then listen and repeat, inshallah. Ready?
Okay. Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
مثلهم كمثل الذي استوقد نارا.
مثلهم كمثل الذي استوقد نارا
فلما أضاءت ما حوله ذهب الله بنورهم
فلما أضاءت ما حوله ذهب الله بنورهم
ذهب الله بنورهم وتركهم في ظلمات لا يبصرون
ذهب الله بنورهم وتركهم في ظلمات لا يبصرون
صم بكم عمي فهم لا يرجعون
صم بكم عمي فهم لا يرجعون.
أحسن ما شاء الله. Thank you so much. Brothers, suppose for example you are like in a room, okay, or somewhere in a hall, wherever, okay, and you're surrounded by lights, many lights, and the hall is like completely enlightened, okay? It's so much bright, okay? Everywhere, every corner you see there is a light, there is a lamp, okay? All right? So it's so much light, there is so much light, and also you can see everywhere, okay? Clearly, yes. Without any problem, there is even no single like darkness, okay? Everywhere you look, it's obvious. You can see everything. You can see, okay? And you're happy, yes? You can see everything. Suppose once the lights are gone, what happens?
Nothing.
Wouldn't you be scared?
You'll be stunned.
Can you see things?
No.
You even forget where the door is.
Yes.
You even cannot move.
You become blind.
Whenever you want to move, okay, forward, you will think like, oh, I'll fall down. Something will hit me on the head.
Yes.
I'll crush with the wall. So it means that once you lose all the lights, isn't it painful?
Yes.
This is painful.
Yeah.
This is a bad situation, actually. Okay? Once the lights are gone, everyone says, oh, the internet is disconnected, for example. The TV is turned off. You can never see each other, so it's a bad situation. Nobody likes this.
Yes.
So Allah Almighty talks about the hypocrites like this. Allah Almighty says that hypocrites are like those people, okay? Like, for example, they are surrounded by lights, okay? Fully, they are surrounded by lights, okay? But once, okay, all the torches are gone, all the lights are gone, okay? And they are in such a darkness. Look, in such a darkness. Even once Allah Almighty has taken all the guidance from them, all the torches, all the lights from them, they're like this. In such kind of darkness they are.
Yes.
So this is a bad situation. They can never go right, left, forward, backward. Wherever they go, crash to the door. Wherever they go, crash with the wall, yes? Oops. So wherever they go, left, right, forward, backward, they will crash with the wall, or they will fall down. They will not find a way. So, like Fawad says, wherever they go, hellfire. Simple as that.
Yes.
So Allah Almighty talks about this. So this is a good example. We have to understand that God Almighty should not let us alone, but let us by our own. Okay, it's very much important. So we have a dua says that Allahumma la takilna ila anfusina tarfata aynin abada. Even for the blink of an eye, O Allah Almighty, do not leave us on our own. Okay, if we are like left by our own or on our own, okay, we will go certainly to the wrong path, and it's certainly hellfire.
Yes.
Okay, it's Allah Almighty's blessings. Inshallah, may Allah Almighty bless us all with kindness, with happiness, with prosperity, with guidance. In the next ayah, Allah Almighty says that summun bukmun umyun fahum la yarji'un. They are deaf, dumb, and blind. Okay? And they will not come back. What does it mean? It means they will not be like, they will not get their hearing back. They will not get their seeing back. Because they are in such a darkness, okay? Allah Almighty says. So, yeah, I really want you to refer to the Tafasir book, okay, for more explanation, inshallah. There are technical terms that you need to understand, all right?
Yes.
So now, let's go word by word and, inshallah, work on the Tajweed rules. قلب بالحق تعلق وبغار حراء تألق يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ.
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
مثلهم فوات حيدر. The first important point is the pronunciation of the letter
ثا.
مثلهم. Alright?
Yes.
And Ali Nasir, the next point. كَمَثَلِ الَّذِي اسْتَوْقَدَ نَارًا. كَمَثَ. Again, ثَا. الَّذِي. Okay.
Yes.
Ya Ahmad. And also, the pronunciation of the letter. ذَال. The next one. اسْتَوْقَدَ. Oh, I said this. I just wanted to ask you. How do you say this word starting with Hamzatul Wasl? If you do not read the preface word, just you start. When you start from a word having Hamzatul Wasl, you have to read Hamzatul Wasl, pronounce Hamzatul Wasl. How do you say this? How do you read this?
The word before it has...
No, the word before, you do not have to read it.
Istawqada.
Why do you put a kasra?
Because we are starting with this letter.
You're starting. Why not fatha? Why not dhamma? Ustawqada, astawqada.
No.
A is better.
Istawqada.
Why?
No, because we should see the letter after it. The sin is sakin. So okay. We leave it.
Yes.
The
third letter.
If
yes.
The letter are fatha or dhamma,
fatha
or kasra, we will
assign the hamzatul wasl with
kasra.
Kasra.
If dhamma, dhamma.
If dhamma, yeah. So whenever you see the third letter, because this is a verb, okay? Verbs
yes.
are
yeah,
like
yeah.
this. So if you see like the third letter after Hamzatul Wasl, first letter, the next letter is surely Sakin. The third letter, look at the third letter. If it has a fatha or kasra, Hamzatul Wasl will be assigned with kasra. Istawqada. Ta has fatha. Istawqada. If it has dhamma, u. If it has kasra, again e. Fatha and kasra, e. Dhamma will be assigned with? Ooh, that's simple as that. But if you join the previous word, easy. Skip that.
Yes.
كَمَثَلِ الَّذِي اسْتَوْقَدَ نَارًا. Tanwin Fatha. If you stop here, Tanwin Fatha will be changed to?
Alif.
Alif Mad.
Alif Mad.
Alif Mad.
Alif Mad.
نَارًا.
نَارًا.
Okay. فَلَمَّا حَرْفُ الْمَدْ. Alif Mad. أَضَاءَتْ. Hamza. Hamza and Harful Mad. In the same word?
No.
Separate words.
Yes.
Jaiz Munfasil.
Jaiz Munfasil. MashaAllah.
I got it right.
Yes, you got it right. Falamma Adaa'at. Adaa and At. So we have Adaa Harful Mad. Then At starts with Hamza. Is it Jaiz Munfasil?
Let me see. Wajib Muttasil.
Wajib Muttasil. Why? Adaa and At.
They're in the same word.
Ada and at. Two words.
It's azaat.
Oh, it's one word. Ada'a, ada'at. Ada'a, it means enlightened or lighted a torch, for okay. example.
If it's like that, you can say ma.
So, two words. But ada'at, yeah, harf al-mad and hamza both are in the same word. So, wajib muttasil. Falamma ada'at. You can say falamma ada'at. But you cannot say falamma ada'at. It's wajib. Ada'at. Ma hawlahu. Dhahaba Allahu. Hawlahu. After who? There is a baby wow, which means it is
wow.
Wow maddi.
Wow maddi.
Hawlahu. Yeah.
So why they didn't just put a wow?
Because if they put a wow, it becomes another word.
Sir said.
Yeah. It will be part of that word, so it's not part of that word.
Yes.
It is just a long sound. All right?
Yes.
Say it again.
Yes.
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 Okay, nice. Yes. He understood it well. That's why he said, yes, that's good. Next one. ذَهَبَ اللَّهُ بِنُورِهِمْ وَتَرَكَهُمْ فِي ظُلُمَاتٍ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ تَرَكَهُمْ فِي ظُلُمَاتٍ تَنْوِينْ كَسْرَ then لَام
ظُلُمَاتٍ
إِدْغَام ظُلُمَاتٍ yeah, you join it. And without one, yes. ظُلُمَاتٍ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ then يُبْصِرُونَ Al-qala, the letter ba.
Yes.
The next word, the next ayah has many rules. Summun, tanwin dhamma. Bukmun, book, starts with ba. Tanwin dhamma, tanwin plus ba.
Iqlab.
Iqlab, masallah. Summun, like meme sound, half meme. Summun, summun, bukmun. Bukmun, tanwin. Umyun, starts with ayn. Tanwin plus ayn. What rule is applied?
Idgham.
Idhar.
Idhar.
Umyun, then umyun. Tanwin. Fa. Fahum. Umyun, fahum.
Ikhfa.
Tanwin plus fa. Ikhfa. So we have Iqlab, Idhar, Ikhfa. Let's only recite this ayah. It's enough, okay? The important rules. Listen.
Summun bukmun umyun fahum la yarji'un. Summun bukmun umyun fahum la yarji'un.
Ahsan. Thank you so much. Inshallah, in the next session, we will be working on the next verses of Surah Al-Baqarah. Stay with us. Make sure you practice well. And if you had any question, you can ask us, okay? Thank you. Thanks, Ali Nasir, Hussein Ruhullah, and Fawad Haida for being with us today. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International School.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Eh.
in most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape, but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They are growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC. They're back as India has revealed or released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The eight radio-colored African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India, covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
World Cleanup Day unites millions of volunteers, governments and organizations to tackle the global waste problem and build a sustainable world. People in several countries joined the efforts again for a waste-free world. Volunteers were seen in mangrove forests in the suburb of Bangkok. They collected more than 1.5 tons of rubbish in just a few hours. Trash picking events were also held in the Philippines and Vietnam. In Hanoi, hundreds, mostly students armed with metal tongs and sacks, walked along major roads. They said their aim is to raise awareness about protecting the environment. In Manila, people cleaned up the city's beaches that are major tourist attractions. The annual cleanup day has been running for over a decade, from divers collecting marine debris to children picking up trash on beaches have just one goal: make our planet a cleaner place.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the 8th month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to all people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre-Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.